Welcome to the Peace Wanted podcast. I know you have been involved in this for many years, in different roles.
I was just thinking now how to introduce my personal interest in all of this. Maybe it comes from a personal vision of nonviolence, come from a cultural work I was doing on myself, and realizing that nonviolence was probably the very first ethical principle that ever came out in the world, because it's probably more than 6,000 years old and went from word of mouth until someone wrote it down. His name was Patanjali, and he wrote down these 10 rules for personal development and living in community.
It's essentially some of the heart of nonviolence.
Some of the heart of needs of human beings.
True.
It is,
yes,
at the heart of the needs of human beings, because we are individuals and diverse, but people who have to live together,
yeah,
who want to live together, who thrive on living together, who make sense of existing by living together. So when I came through all of this, I was around almost 50, and I said, well, this isn't theory, this has to be put in practice. And I had been doing civil society work, community work, and things like that on a volunteer basis with my professions and family obligations and things like that. But I always thought that we had to always think that we should also look to the common good in neighborhoods, among groups, and things like that. And this nonviolent principle struck me as a way of reducing conflict a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So my story started as a personal acercamiento, to understanding
come together, yeah,
with nonviolence, and asking right and left, what experiences were there of applying nonviolence to civil society?
Yeah.
Working.
To the way we live and work, yeah.
And I met Michael Nagler, and Michael Nagler finally introduced me to a nonviolent peace force, and that's a story. Finally, nonviolence in community work. Exactly, in action. Yes.
That's really interesting. So I hadn't really articulated nonviolence in that way, that it's the nonviolence is the coming together and the communal. And that's really interesting, because I often think of nonviolence very much as accepting many truths and sort of like no othering. But of course, which I haven't really realized until you just said, the not othering is that communal building.
Yes, and Novakt has transformed its vision of nonviolence. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, we would be talking about nonviolent peace force in Spain, and we would be received by other organizations, peace organizations,
yeah,
who would say, oh no, you can't talk about nonviolence because it's passive. Don't talk about nonviolence because it's too Gandhian, it's too Martin Luther King. We do not have that sort of social, civil need,
yeah,
and movements, and forget nonviolence. It's not something you want to talk about. And today, NOVA has transformed from NOVA to Nonviolent to NOVACT, which was Institute for Nonviolent Action, and has today transformed into the Institute for Nonviolence.
That's where it's got to. Isn't that interesting? So it's actually at its heart.
To
That's
20
very
years.
Unique. That is quite unique.
The need to understand that underlying any action, you need a nonviolent perspective, so as to not create conflict, because actions usually create conflict. Any sort of action, family, neighborhood, workplace, etc., etc.
But starting from that as your starting point, that must open a huge number of possibilities to do.
You mean for NOVACT?
Yeah, so because there is Nonviolent Peace Force, which is an organization, but Having nonviolence as your starting point, you can see all of society needing to be transformed.
Yes. So basically, because of what happens in life and being able to pick up an opportunity when you find it, the whole NOVACT supports nonviolent movements in the Arab-Mediterranean basin. So it works in North, it now today works in North Africa, Middle East, and is also becoming someone to take into account as not experts, but very, very knowledgeable about Eastern Europe. Basically, we started by supporting non-violent movements for civil society reivindications.
And movements that specifically say we use non-violence.
Exactly.
So building up that connection.
Yes.
To people who are already...
Who understand, but need at times to integrate the nonviolence that is nonviolent action with nonviolence that is how do we approach lobbying, how do we approach how do we approach those who want the same things but want to do it violently. I'm talking about Palestine, for example, I'm talking about Morocco, I'm talking about, there are a lot of them, Georgia. So these are all, and much of this has also transformed into trainings. Different sorts of trainings for different sorts of actions, but based on nonviolent principles.
That sounds very exciting.
It's overreaching, and the feeling is you're not ever doing enough.
Well, that's true. Because you've already mentioned Palestine, Georgia, Morocco, but as soon as you start going, oh yeah, and there's, oh, but that's all that, and yeah, it does grow quite quickly.
It started off with three Iraqi students asking for a training in nonviolent action in 2003 or 4, which we did in Amman, and Palestinians came. So, I mean... And there are a lot of other organizations who are working in the same places where we work.
Yeah.
So the other thing is nonviolently finding synergies.
Yeah.
We can't do it all. I think that's a concept that is also transformed a lot, because 20 years ago, each organization knew exactly what their niche was and what they were going to do, and that they didn't need anybody else.
Yeah.
Whereas today, I really find that partnering is becoming mainstream. We partner a lot.
That's good.
And that's something that I think is a nonviolent transformation.
Yes, yeah, because in cooperation you have to listen and welcome the other. And so with unarmed civilian protection, that is also partnering and synergies and things like that. So do you see a lot of ways in which like NOVACT and UCP fit together, or...?
Well, we've been talking about this for 3 days, and my ideas get a bit clearer every moment. The idea for me is that many organizations that are doing peace work are calling an unarmed civilian protection and accompaniment in different ways. So, for example, in Western Africa, in the Sahel, where there is a very difficult situation, and we work a lot. We often talk about offering community security trainings so that the self-defense and self-protection that already is present can be more put into a more global vision and become more effective. So it's not about closing the doors and locking it and hoping no one will come in. It's about having someone come into your house and accompany you during the times, that sort of thing. And community protection, community security taught also to the policing people who substitute the police because they don't want armed security and they don't want official security, but they do want security in their neighborhoods, for example.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that community security enhancing and empowering, which is basically a non-civilian protection training, for example.
So community security is about getting people to talk about their security.
Yes.
So is there an element in which, if they articulate what they do, there's almost somebody who can go like, yeah, that's what you're doing, and here's another way of making
it
more robust? Or
that is probably one of the non-violent acercamientos going towards, is that you listen to the needs before expressing your
thoughts.
Before
planning what you're going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to go in and teach them this.
Yes.
That's...
And if that happens because of a trainer,
yeah,
you're putting in jeopardy the whole credibility of the organization, something
yeah.
that you also have to think about. So finding also people who believe in nonviolence, who understand nonviolence, who understand with what respect you have to go into another's house, is extremely important. And we have also had cases in which we have had to rectify and revise maybe even our relationships with the communities.
So even thinking about the way we train trainers.
Exactly.
It's not really a step by step, is it? Because it's
often temporary. That's something that I've always seen. If you go to work with communities, you sort of go adapting to what their needs are and go transforming yourself as an organization. So there's no, I mean, mission and vision have to be extremely general. the strategic, 3-year strategic plans can be very interesting. But, for example, we finished a strategic plan in 2021, approved it.
Yeah.
And the Ukraine war came in. And there was a niche for us to be useful.
Yeah.
But it wasn't clearly in the plan. So that's also nonviolent negotiations inside and outside, and because maybe you were thinking of other interventions and you say, no, instead of this, we can offer this. And there's a lot of nonviolent work going on there, too.
And when you think about it, do you think about it as like, NOVA is a small organization, or because of all the partnerships and many connections that you have? I can imagine, because you're talking about like Sahel and Ukraine, and there are these people who sort of connect.
Yes, we branch out. But it is an organization that has grown. It has grown not only in financial support, in receiving funding because of its respected work, but it's grown also physically. I mean, we started off like 7 people, and there are now 44 working. So there's...
That's quite a big difference, isn't it?
And it's not in many years, I mean, as it's... But there is a need, in general, what I've seen here with the organizations we've been working with, there is such a need for this sort of approach.
Do you
that
mean
the communities...
civilian protection or growing...
Yes. No. Nonviolent intervention or the nonviolent accompaniment in communities, not only physical accompaniment, which is what many of these organizations do, not only physical, has grown to become a need recognized by the communities. And that's also why these organizations have grown, because the need is being reflected by the communities.
And do you think we've got better at hearing that need, listening to it, or it must have been there before, isn't it?
In some way, there must be some magic way in which finances are coming to these organizations, people are coming to these organizations, and they're doing the work. In some magic way, which is, I'm talking with people who measure, I don't measure, but there's something in the air that says, this is growing. And even though at times I am taken aback by what the results seem to be, because I was saying, I've been talking with many people, and I was saying, you know, why? I firmly believe that the situation in Palestine has never blown up like it's blowing up now because of the peace work that has been done for years. So there is a recognition, and there will be a recognition, that it can go awry, like it has right now, but there is a possibility of transforming it afterwards too, like we are trying to do in Ukraine.
Yeah.
The rebuilding of society, the depolarization of civil society, there is such a great need, and it has to be, and communities recognize that it has to be nonviolent. It cannot be imposed from above. It needs to be owned. The ownership has to be from the community, but they have to be supported.
But it sounds like very much you're thinking that nonviolent accompaniment in the midst of violence is what we have to do, even in the midst of violence, in order to get to something that might resemble peace.
And that's what's
being
done.
Should we be able to de-escalate the violence?
That's what we're doing in Ukraine. We are talking to organizations, young people, civil churches, and it was also talked about in another example that we heard here. All the communities have their centers where leadership
community
is.
Community
centers, churches. It can be youth centers. It can be, and those are requesting. Those are clearly requesting any sort of support or training on nonviolent ways.
Because they know that this is where it's got to end up. Or because they're just, I don't know, I mean, living in the midst of a war, it seems so incredible that people's idea is,
we need to go for nonviolence because that's the only way we're going to come out of the war and come out of the polarization that we're going to have. I mean, as always, most of the wars up to now have not been between states.
Yeah.
This is the first one. It has been among civil society.
Yeah.
Citizen A and citizens B. So the idea is we still need to do great work on feelings and needs of civil society among themselves.
Mm.
So this part of the community that looks after the well-being of community is the one that is so aware that nonviolent means are needed. This is the impression we have from Novakt, from where we work.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's probably not applicable to everything.
But maybe it is, because that ability of trusting in nonviolence is about rehumanizing.
Exactly.
It's about seeing the people who maybe are attacking you or who very far from you in ideas, still seeing them as human.
Exactly, which is what everybody's feeling. Let's also think that in these last 20 years, there are two institutions that have gone down the drain, to say it bluntly. One is family, and the other is church, or religious belief. These two were the ones that gave values to people. Whether, doesn't matter how it was used, but it also helped a lot to live together. Because there were rules, you know, human rules to get along. This has sort of disappeared. And people are, I would say, the last two generations are desperately trying to find, to refine this human relationship part, this human collaboration part, to be able to live and feel comfortable. And technology has also been one of the things that has transformed in worse society, because this human relationship building has been completely transformed, and there's been no history, no storytelling, no storytelling of what was different before and what could be different. There's no option, and this is something that makes when people are really in crisis, they look towards finding in themselves, which means calming down what comes from the mind, finding in themselves that safer space, and then looking to transmit it outwards, and that's how they rebuild relationships. But there are ways to do it in formalized situations, and that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
too.
And I love this. So coming back to this that lies about human relations brings us back to where you started with 6,000 years of nonviolence being centred on the communal. And it just seems to be that circle of there is action and there's feelings, but actually coming back to that communal.
That need. That human need.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would never have been expressed 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is basically nonviolence is often also defined as do no harm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
Also active.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think the thinking about unarmed civilian protection with this nonviolent basis and all about rehumanizing, it does feel like it's in many places. So if you're working in Sahel, if there's trainings in Iraq and working in Morocco, it seems like it's in many places.
Humaneness is needed by man. There is no geographic definition, there is no religious definition, there is no racial definition. Humans need one another. And when conflict arises, there is a great need of finding ways forward to transform. Mm. So we have millions of systems. And this accompaniment through this group of people who are thinking the same way, who also do lobbying for peace and they do peacekeeping, yeah. They do peace building,
they do organizing as well, don't they?
Exactly.
In terms of, yeah, building movements, building communities. Because I was really struck by when they were talking about the peace zones and the peace communities in Colombia.
Exactly.
People live together in this.
And that's coming back to original systems of community-based crisis resolution.
Mm.
And they were always based on bringing down the violence.
Mm.
And this is all over the world. So this part, let's talk now about unarmed civilian protection and accompaniment, is about giving them a chance, empowering them, and that famous phrase, which is, don't give fish, teach them to fish.
Yes, yes.
I think it's so important.
Yeah, to apply that to even what we would talk about protecting people.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So this
we maybe need to come up with a new slogan other than fish. I don't know what it is, but we could try.
At least it's natural. But it is something. It's like I think it's being used by a lot of these organizations that do other types of work too, because they're calling it with another name, because it's such an important part. This humanizing part is such an important part of any vision of peace being able to flourish. There is this need of going down and telling people that the world is not so individualist, that the other exists, and that there are principles with which we can work together.
I find that something which is full of hope. It's sad because it ultimately rests on rebuilding connections and relationships.
Which is also very much needed in our societies.
Yes.
The awareness that this is there and that it is needed to go forward, because there's a lot of lost hope among those who think they're helping.
Yeah, I see. So and I think for me this really helps explain to life. So Nova thinking, putting violence at its heart, seeing how that connects out to the communities, the work, and the
trainings, the people, especially what is needed.
Yeah.
What is needed.
It's a great model, a great way of thinking.
Well, it's also something that has come. I mean, started out doing a training and then the needs come up.
Yeah.
And that's something also that I found here, is that everyone says that we have to go adapting as organizations to what is requested. If here we talked about two very important issues, which was decolonization and engaging community voices. As many of these organizations are based in the North, this is an awareness-raising call to us to be able to fit in, accept, and help with what is already existing. It's not about, and it's been for many years, it's been, here I come, this is the solution, forget it. So that gives me hope. That gives me hope because it's transforming the thinking, the paradigm.
Wow.
But it is. It is hopeful. If there is anything that worries me, it's a younger generation not caring about these things, not informing themselves about injustice, about needs, about not realizing that 1% of the world is holding the other 99% in hostage. It's the need to not focus only on what is being given to you as bad news all the time, and what is coming out in entertainment is horrifying, horrifying. The violence in entertainment is absolutely horrifying. So that they become critical and are able to see that there are different aspects and different points of view and different ways of going towards life, which is often ends up in caring, you know. You care about something or someone.
Connect with them.
And each one will have their own vocation. I mean, it's not that I'm saying we all have to become
unarmed
civilian peace protectors. No, what I'm saying is we need new blood. We need youth. We are trying, ANOVA is trying desperately to enter universities, talk to young people. I was very happy yesterday to see the various university students there. But the idea is we have to get further. There's more to life, and, well, we see it also in how civil society in big cities is developing. There's a lot of problems. That's why I liked the New Yorker, the way he prospected in such a terrible situation. The capacity of building humanity inside of the people so that they could transform their communities. I found it breathtaking. We're not there yet as Novat, but it will be an aspect that will be faced at a certain point, I'm sure.
Our working together will get up there.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Rachel, it's been such a long way together.
It is. And absolutely fascinating.
And there's so much more to do.
There is.
I keep on saying another thing that I keep on saying, which is terrible on my part. I've become an old woman, but there is a cathedral being built, and cathedrals took at least 8 or 10 generations. So there's a little piece of stone there that says Simonetta, but there are millions of stones around Simonetta Stone that have the other names on it, and there is a piece of that cathedral that is what we put down, and I'll never see that cathedral built, but I believe it will be built.
Yeah.
Which is the hope.
That is the hope.
That is the hope.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Come back soon.